All right, get ready, because we're taking a deep dive today into the final years of the Kingdom of Judah. We're going to be exploring some excerpts from a lecture by Dr. Gary Yates, and we're focusing on the reigns of the last five kings of Judah during the time of the prophet Jeremiah.
Yeah, it's a really captivating period, actually, not just because of all the political craziness going on, but because these kings, well, they were direct descendants of King David, chosen by God to rule. Can you imagine the weight of that kind of legacy?
It's really hard to fathom. And yet, you know, according to Dr. Yates, these kings, even with this amazing heritage, they ended up playing a huge role in their own nation's downfall. But here's where it gets even more interesting. Even in the middle of all this judgment, there are these hints of hope for what's going to happen to David's line.
That's right. It's like a story reminding us that even when humans mess up, God's promises can still hold true. And it makes us think about the choices we're making now and how they might affect things down the line.
Okay, so to really get this whole story, we got to start with the basics. God's covenant with David. Dr. Yates really stresses how important this is to grasping the fate of Judah. Can you break down the key points for us?
Sure. You see, God promised David an enduring dynasty, a line of kings that would rule forever. But, and it's a big but, this promise wasn't a blank check. It came with a catch: obedience. Each king was judged based on how well he followed God's law.
So it wasn't like a guaranteed ticket to power just because you happen to be related to David. It was more like, here's the potential, but you got to live up to it.
You got it. That's a great way to put it. And Dr. Yates points out that God showed both his faithfulness and just how serious he was about the covenant's conditions all through history. Even when kings like David and Solomon messed up big time, think David's affair with Bathsheba or Solomon drifting towards idolatry, the Davidic line continued. God kept his promise to always have a descendant on David's throne.
That raises an interesting question, though. If God was so committed to upholding the Davidic line, why did he let Judah fall? Why didn't he just step in and save these last kings from themselves?
That's where the human factor comes in. God gave them free will, the ability to choose their own path. And unfortunately, they chose poorly, and those choices led to their downfall. Dr. Yates argues that God's judgment wasn't random or out of the blue. It was a consequence of their constant disobedience and rejection of his ways.
So God's promise to David had this enduring, unconditional part that there would always be a descendant. But each individual king's success hinged on their obedience. It's a fascinating mix of God's sovereignty and human responsibility.
Exactly. And that tension runs through the stories of these last five kings. Each one had the chance to be great, but their choices ultimately decided their fate.
Okay, so let's get into the specifics of each king's reign. Dr. Yates begins with Josiah, who is often remembered as the last good king of Judah.
Josiah was a fascinating guy. He became king when he was only 8 years old, and even at that young age, he showed a real desire to follow God. He started religious reforms, tried to get rid of idolatry in the land, and even rediscovered the Book of the Law, which sparked a spiritual revival in Judah. It seemed like things were finally turning around.
A young king leading a spiritual awakening. You'd think that would set Judah on a whole new path.
Yeah, you'd think so, right. But Josiah's story has this tragic irony. Despite his piety and good intentions, Dr. Yates points out that he made a huge political mistake. He got involved in a conflict between Egypt and Babylon, which went directly against God's guidance.
And that decision turned out to be fatal.
Sadly, yes. He was killed in battle, which ended his reign and, in a lot of ways, reversed all the progress he had made. It's a stark reminder that even the most well-meaning leaders can make choices that have unintended and disastrous consequences.
It makes you wonder, did the people around him try to talk him out of it? Or did he feel pressured by forces outside of Judah? What do you think pushed him to make such a risky move, considering his commitment to following God?
Dr. Yates doesn't get into the specific reasons behind Josiah's choice, but he does emphasize how humans tend to justify their actions, even when those actions clash with what they know is right. It's possible Josiah believed he was acting in Judah's best interests, but his judgment was clouded, maybe by external pressure or even a sense of overconfidence.
It's a lesson that still applies today. We can have the best intentions, the purest motives, but still trip up if we don't seek God's wisdom and stay humble before him.
Absolutely. And the consequences can spread far beyond ourselves, impacting those we lead and changing the course of history.
So when Josiah died, it left a big void. His son, Jehoahaz, took the throne. But his reign was incredibly short-lived, wasn't it?
Yeah, only 3 months. Remember, the Egyptians were the ones who killed Josiah. When their army came back from their campaign, they decided to get rid of Jehoahaz. Dr. Yates suggests they probably fear that he would follow in his father's footsteps and side with Babylon, which was a threat to their power.
So they basically kidnapped him and sent him off to Egypt.
Basically. And Jeremiah gave a pretty bleak prophecy about Jehoahaz, saying that he would die in captivity and never see his homeland again.
What a dramatic change of fortune. From king to captive in the blink of an eye. I can imagine this sudden upheaval caused a lot of anxiety and uncertainty among the people of Judah.
It definitely did. Their king, a symbol of stability and hope, was gone. Their future was uncertain, and the threat of foreign domination was looming large.
So who did the Egyptians put in Jehoahaz's place?
Another one of Josiah's sons, Jehoiakim. And let me tell you, he was a very different kind of leader.
Jehoiakim. That name definitely stands out in Dr. Yates' lecture. He was the one who really clashed with Jeremiah, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. Dr. Yates calls him Jeremiah's arch nemesis, and with good reason. Jehoiakim was, to put it mildly, not open to God's message.
I remember Dr. Yates mentioning how Jehoiakim focused on extravagant renovations for his palace while his people were suffering. It's hard to believe a leader could be so out of touch with the needs of their people.
It's a clear example of misplaced priorities, isn't it? With the threat of a Babylonian invasion hanging over them and people struggling to survive, Jehoiakim was worried about his own comfort and prestige. It says a lot about his character.
And his response to Jeremiah's prophecies was even more shocking, right?
Totally. The way Jehoiakim reacted to Jeremiah's scroll is one of the most chilling moments in this whole story. Instead of listening to the warnings and seeking God's guidance, he burned the scroll. He literally rejected God's word.
That's incredible. What do you think fueled such an extreme reaction? Was it pure arrogance? Or was there something more going on?
It's a question worth thinking about. Dr. Yates suggests that Jehoiakim probably felt threatened by Jeremiah's message, which directly challenged his leadership and called him to repent. Maybe he thought silencing the messenger was easier than facing the truth about his own actions and the consequences that were coming.
It's a dynamic we still see today, isn't it? People rejecting information or messengers that challenge their comfort zones or how they see the world.
It's a timeless human struggle. But as Jehoiakim's story shows us, trying to silence the truth doesn't make it go away. The consequences of our actions, whether we acknowledge them or not, will always catch up to us.
And those consequences were pretty severe for Jehoiakim, weren't they?
They were. Remember, he was initially put in power by the Egyptians, but everything changed when the Babylonians beat the Egyptians at Carchemish. Babylon became the main power in the region, and Jehoiakim found himself in a really tough spot.
Caught between a rock and a hard place. And he tried to play both sides, right? Hoping to get back in with the Egyptians while pretending to submit to Babylon.
Exactly. But his double dealing didn't work. The Babylonians saw right through his games. They eventually surrounded Jerusalem, captured Jehoiakim, and were ready to take him back to Babylon as a prisoner.
So his attempts to outsmart the Babylonians totally backfired. It seems like he never learned the lesson his father's death should have taught him. Defying God and chasing after worldly alliances will always end badly.
It's a powerful point. Both Josiah and Jehoiakim experienced the consequences of their choices, even though those consequences were different. Josiah's political maneuvering led to his death, while Jehoiakim's defiance and misplaced trust in human power ended with his captivity.
It's a serious reminder that true security and lasting peace aren't found in political alliances or military strength.
Yeah.
They come from aligning ourselves with God's will.
You got it. And as we'll see, Jehoiakim's successors also failed to learn that lesson.
So Jehoiakim's reign ended in captivity, which left Judah in a very shaky position. What happened next? Did the Babylonians just, like, appoint another puppet king?
They did. Jehoiakim's son, Jehoiachin, also known as Coniah, took the throne. But just like his father, he also did evil in the eyes of the Lord, as the scriptures say.
Another king who didn't learn from the past. It seems like a pattern was forming here. So how long did Jehoiachin's reign last?
Only 3 months. He was just 18 years old when he became king. Talk about trial by fire.
18 and already king during such a crazy time. I can't even imagine the pressure he must have felt. What do you think, based on Dr. Yates' insights, was going through Jehoiachin's head? Was he just following in his father's footsteps because he was scared or felt obligated?
It's a really interesting question. Dr. Yates doesn't give a definite answer, but he does point out the influence of Jehoiachin's advisors, who probably had a lot of sway over the young king. It's possible they encouraged him to resist Babylonian rule, hoping for a miracle or maybe for Egypt to regain power.
So, young and impressionable, surrounded by advisors who might have had their own agendas. It kind of paints a sad picture, doesn't it? This young man stuck in the middle of forces beyond his control.
It does. And sadly, his short reign ended in tragedy. Remember that second capture of Jerusalem by the Babylonians? Well, that happened while Jehoiachin was king.
Oh, right. So he was the king when the city finally fell. What happened to him?
He was taken captive along with a lot of Judah's elite, including the prophet Ezekiel. Jeremiah gave some really powerful prophecies about what would happen to Jehoiachin. He used some striking imagery. He described him as a broken pot, thrown away and worthless, and even as God's signet ring torn off and tossed aside.
Those are strong, almost disturbing images. What do they mean?
The broken pot symbolizes how worthless Jehoiachin seemed to the Babylonians. He was just discarded, like you might throw away a cracked pot without a second thought.
And the signet ring. That seems even more symbolic.
Yeah, it is. A signet ring represented authority and identity. It was used to seal documents showing the king's power and approval. So when Jeremiah says that God is tearing off his signet ring, it's a symbolic act of removing his favor and authority from Jehoiachin's line.
So it's almost like God is saying, look, you broke the covenant and I'm holding you accountable. But it's symbolic, not a complete break. It's interesting how Dr. Yates points out these subtleties.
Right. And we have to remember that God's judgment, while severe, wasn't meant to be the last word. Even amidst these pronouncements of doom, there are these little hints of hope woven into Jeremiah's prophecies.
Oh, that's right. Dr. Yates mentioned that Jehoiachin was eventually released from prison.
Yes, he was. After 37 years as a captive, Jehoiachin was released by the Babylonian king and treated with kindness. He was even allowed to eat at the king's table, which was a big honor.
37 years. Wow. That's a really long time to be held captive. Must have felt like a lifetime. What do you think caused this sudden change of heart from the Babylonians?
It's a question that has puzzled scholars for ages. Dr. Yates doesn't speculate on the exact political or personal reasons for Jehoiachin's release, but he does point out how important this event is theologically.
I'm all ears. What's the deeper meaning here?
Well, it's subtle but powerful. It reminds us that God hadn't completely abandoned the Davidic line, even though it seemed like all hope was gone.
So even in exile, even though Jerusalem was destroyed, God was still working behind the scenes, orchestrating events to fulfill his purpose.
Exactly. And the fact that the book of Jeremiah ends with this account of Jehoiachin's release, not his death, suggests that the story is not over yet.
It's almost like a cliffhanger, leaving us with this feeling of anticipation, a glimmer of hope in all the destruction. And it sets the stage for the reign of the last king we're talking about, Zedekiah.
Right. Zedekiah, another son of Josiah, was put on the throne by the Babylonians after they captured Jehoiachin. They were hoping for a more obedient ruler, someone who would keep Judah in line.
Basically another puppet king, doing the bidding of his Babylonian masters. Did he end up being more cooperative than his predecessors?
Well, no, not really. Just like his brothers, Zedekiah also got that label. He did what was evil in the eyes of the Lord.
It's like this tragic cycle repeating itself. They saw what happened because of disobedience, yet they followed the same path. What led Zedekiah down this road?
Dr. Yates describes Zedekiah as a weak, indecisive ruler, stuck between wanting to please the Babylonians and the pressure from his advisors to rebel. He went back and forth, never fully committing to one side.
So unlike Jehoiakim, whose defiance came from arrogance and hostility, Zedekiah's disobedience seems like it was rooted in fear and insecurity.
That's a good observation. Jehoiakim straight up rejected God's word, while Zedekiah struggled to make a decision, paralyzed by fear and conflicting loyalties. Both types of disobedience had terrible consequences.
Two different personalities, two different ways of leading, yet they both failed to trust in God and obey his commands. It's a serious reminder that disobedience can look different in different people, but the consequences are always significant.
I agree. And Zedekiah's inability to make a firm choice, along with his refusal to listen to Jeremiah's warnings, ultimately led to the Babylonian siege of Jerusalem in 588 BC.
The siege that eventually destroyed the city and the temple. That must have been a terrifying experience for the people of Judah.
It was a complete catastrophe. The siege went on for a grueling 18 months, and during that time, Jeremiah kept urging Zedekiah to surrender, assuring him that it was the only way to avoid total destruction.
But Zedekiah still refused to listen, even with the destruction of his city imminent.
It seems he couldn't bring himself to go against his advisors who insisted on fighting back. Maybe he clung to a tiny bit of hope that Egypt would come to their rescue, or maybe he just couldn't handle the humiliation of surrendering. Whatever the reason, his indecision sealed Jerusalem's fate.
So the city that was once a symbol of God's presence and blessing became a battleground, a testament to the consequences of constant disobedience.
It's pretty ironic, isn't it? The very place God had chosen to dwell became a scene of devastation and despair, all because of the actions of those who were supposed to represent him.
What happened to Zedekiah after the city fell?
He tried to escape with his family, but they were caught. He was forced to watch his sons get executed. Then he was blinded and taken to Babylon as a prisoner.
A brutal and humiliating end to his reign. And with Jerusalem destroyed and Zedekiah captured, it seemed like the Davidic dynasty had finally come to an end.
It certainly looked that way. But remember, Dr. Yates emphasized this idea of a glimmer of hope throughout this whole narrative.
You're right. There's this thread of hope woven through the judgment, even in the darkest moments. And it's all tied to God's unwavering faithfulness to his covenant with David, right?
Exactly. And that brings us to a crucial point that Dr. Yates makes about the Davidic covenant, the difference between the conditional and unconditional parts of God's promise.
Okay, now this is where it gets really interesting. Could you unpack that for us?
Sure. So God's promise to David had two distinct parts. The conditional part focused on the individual kings. Their success, their ability to keep their dynasty going, depended on how well they obeyed God's laws and commands. We've seen how that played out with these last five kings of Judah. Their choices had direct consequences, and ultimately, they caused their own downfall.
So that part of the promise was kind of like dependent on their actions. They had the potential, but it was up to them to live up to it.
Yeah, exactly. But then there's the unconditional part of the promise, the part that couldn't be broken no matter what the kings did. God promised David that he would always have a descendant on the throne, a lineage that would last forever.
Ah, so even though David's earthly kingdom had fallen apart, the promise of a lasting dynasty remained.
Precisely. And that's where the glimmer of hope shines the brightest, because this unconditional promise is ultimately fulfilled in Jesus, a descendant of David who establishes a kingdom that will never be destroyed.
Wow. So the line of David didn't end with Zedekiah. It continued, but in a way that goes beyond earthly kingdoms and political power. It shifted to a spiritual realm, a kingdom of hearts changed by grace.
That's a beautiful way to put it. And it speaks to how lasting God's promises are, even when things look really bad. He's always at work, even when we don't see it, fulfilling his purpose in ways we might not initially understand.
It's amazing to think that even with all the chaos and destruction, with Jerusalem falling and the Babylonian exile, this thread of hope, this promise of a lasting legacy for David, well, it stayed intact. It really shows how enduring God's promises are.
Yeah, it really does. It pushes us to look past the immediate stuff, past what looks like failure, and see that bigger picture that God is putting together. Dr. Yates reminds us that God's ways are often not our ways. What might seem like the end can actually be a brand new start.
So even though David's earthly kingdom ended so dramatically, his line continued, but in this transformed way, pointing to a spiritual kingdom that goes beyond earthly boundaries.
Exactly. And that brings us back to Jehoiachin. His story is like a perfect example of this theme of judgment and hope all mixed up together. Remember, he was denounced, condemned, called a broken vessel, God's signet ring tossed aside. But even he experienced some restoration.
His release from prison after 37 years is such a key moment. It's like this burst of light in a story that's been so dark. Why do you think Dr. Yates put so much emphasis on this event?
It's a small detail, but it says a lot. Dr. Yates points out that this act of grace, this unexpected turn of events, it's a powerful reminder that God's judgment is never the final word. Even when we experience the fallout from our choices, there's always potential for redemption and restoration.
It's like God is saying, hey, I haven't forgotten about you. I haven't given up on you. There's still a purpose for your life.
Exactly. And that message of hope isn't just for Jehoiachin. It's for all of us. We all mess up. We all fall short of God's standards. But God's grace is always there. He's always willing to forgive, to restore, to give us a fresh start.
It's a message that's so easy to lose sight of when we're stuck in that cycle of sin and consequences. We can get so caught up in the immediate situation that we forget about God's bigger plan, his unwavering love and mercy.
You know, I think that's why Dr. Yates highlights the importance of understanding both the conditional and the unconditional parts of the Davidic covenant. Yeah, there are consequences for our actions, but God's love and faithfulness, they stick around. He's always working to bring something good out of even the toughest situations.
So what are the main takeaways from this deep dive into the fall of Judah? What can we, as modern-day listeners, learn from this ancient story? It's tempting to see this as just a historical account, something that happened ages ago and doesn't relate to us today. But I think there's a lot more to it than that.
I agree. This isn't just some ancient history. It's a story that speaks to, like, the human experience. It's a story about what happens when we disobey, the pull of power, the struggle to trust God when things are uncertain, and the lasting hope of redemption.
It's almost like a mirror showing us our own tendencies, our struggles, our need for grace.
Right. And it invites us to look at our own lives, our own choices, and ask ourselves some hard questions. Are we living in a way that honors God? Are we looking to Him for guidance when we make decisions? Are we trusting His promises, even when things look grim?
Those are questions that really get to the heart of our faith, aren't they? Because in the end, the story of the kings of Judah isn't just about them, it's about us. It's about the choices we make, the consequences we deal with, and the God who is always there, ready to redeem and restore us.
I couldn't have put it better myself. And as we wrap up this deep dive, I think it's important to remember that even though David's earthly kingdom ended, God's promise of a dynasty that would last forever, well, that was fulfilled in Jesus.
So the story doesn't end in tragedy and despair. It ultimately points us toward hope, a hope that goes beyond earthly kingdoms and political power. It's a hope that's based on Jesus and the kingdom He established, a kingdom of hearts changed by grace, a kingdom that will never be shaken.
And that's a message worth holding on to no matter what we're going through.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking us on this amazing journey through history and theology. I think it's safe to say it's given us a lot to think about.
It definitely has, and I hope our listeners have found it just as thought-provoking.
So, until next time, keep exploring, keep asking those tough questions, and keep searching for the truth that sets us free.